Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Thanks for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse MLL Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined as always by Kyle Devitt, and today we are coming at you guestless because apparently, Kyle, on the second last week of the MLL season, which also happens to coincide with the beginning of the college lacrosse recruiting dark period, five members of the Cannons and Hounds, respectively, 3 and 2, didn't get back to me in order to be able to jump on this show. I don't know whether they're on media lockdown. I don't know whether they're on vacation. I don't know whether they're at practice. What do you think? Where are all these MLL players?
Maybe they're not allowed to come on the podcast after we exposed the salary cap 2 weeks ago.
That was 2 weeks ago? It feels like last week. But either way, it seems unlikely to be true. I'm going to guess that that's not the answer.
Yeah, you're probably right. But I just wanted to bring that up again. This is my Woodward and Bernstein moment, as Mr. Bebo said.
There it is, except that it didn't really involve a dark garage or a manila envelope or anything like that, so it's a little disappointing, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, teleconference with MLL coaches, and you ask a question, and sometimes you get an answer. And I was shocked, and I think everyone else on the call was shocked too, but it was cool. This week, not so much controversy in the coach's call, although Cottle got a little up in arms over refereeing and refereeing decisions and stuff, and that was fun. But other than that, kind of a snoozer.
And that might be a good place to start, because obviously, you know, it was interesting watching a lot of games this weekend, kind of seeing the different tone that the broadcasters took to the size and scope of the matchups. After, you know, I began this podcast last week talking about how the best games were the games that didn't necessarily have the most significant implications, and the ones that had the most significant implications were the not-as-interesting games. That being said, there's no doubt about it. The Denver Outlaws continue their undefeated season, their pretty epic win streak, with a 14-12 come-from-behind win over the Chesapeake Bayhawks on Saturday afternoon, in which there were a couple of controversial calls. What were your thoughts on, I don't know, do you want to start with the game in general, or what were your thoughts on the officiating?
I mean, the officiating was definitely inconsistent, if I may say that. I think...
You can say whatever you want, because you will not get fined for...
That's true. I don't know. I don't know why the same crews work the same games. I mean, I do because of geographical, restrictions, but, like, it just seems like some of the refs just sleepwalk through the game because they're like, oh, they're pros, we'll just let them play. You know, and I think that's wrong. Like, that is a slash more stringently called in college? Of course it is. Because it's college, you know, young men. But, like, these are grown men too. But lacrosse has rules. Like, enforce the rules. You know, there's too much slashing going on. There are no attempts to get the ball out of the stick anymore. Everyone's all just hack mastering everybody. Like, shooters are settling for stuff they wouldn't normally settle for. And, you know, it's turning into, all right, well, our attackman can't get to the cage. Let's just go top down, clear out, and let our middies go one-on-one with their D-mids. And that's, you know, that's boring. That it's not fun to watch. And that happened in the Denver Chesapeake game.
And you attribute that to the lack of slashing that's being called?
I think part of it is because there's less man up. You know, there were how many minutes of penalties were in this game? Three minutes of penalties. I mean, there should have been about 20. It was for both sides, not just one or the other. Both sides going at it.
Is that what Cottle was primarily complaining about as well?
I think so. That and, like, you know, the refs, you know, this is the game that Quint and Joe called. And there was a play, we talked about on the conference call with Cottle where, you know, Chesapeake had a quick restart and Zink was standing next to the guy with the ball, and you can't do that. You know, and the ref hesitated to blow the whistle because Zink wasn't moving. That's a flag. That's a flag. It's a flag in college. It's a flag in the MLL. As far as, you know, Cottle explained it, it's, you have to give 5 yards to the ball carrier, and with a quick whistle, if you don't give 5 yards to the ball carrier, he's got a free check. So you're slowing everything down. You're, you know, not getting punished for it. And I mean, that's not a really great example because, Chesapeake actually ended up scoring about 5 seconds afterwards, for some quick passing, but that's just one example. And the guys on the broadcast, like, usually do a good job, but they, like, didn't understand what the call was. Cause you, on the tape, you can hear the Bayhawks bench going crazy. And I'm watching at home. I'm going, oh my God, that's, you know, you can't do that. Like, throw the flag. I'm saying the same thing. And they didn't do it. So, I mean, it just was one of those things that definitely stood out. I think the Mundorf Evans altercation, even though it was early, was definitely coming.
And how did you think that should have been adjudicated?
I think, you know, when you take a two-hander to someone's chest, if I take a two-hander to someone's chest in summer ball, I'm getting chucked.
No, I understand that, there was a slash that preceded it that wasn't called that precipitated the reaction. So
several slashes.
Right. I mean, so do you think
it was like six?
To me, that's the best reason, explanation, comment. That's the best argument for why these types of rules, the physicality rules, should be more strictly enforced. Because despite the fact that they're grown men, they can absorb more punishment, presumably. They have more reason, incentive to absorb more punishment, that being that they're being paid. And they can, quote-unquote, police themselves better. They also will police themselves with the same type of ferocity that they're playing with. So the risk of, you know, a Brennan Mundorf slash to the chest is going to inflict a little bit more damage than your typical college, even Division I college lacrosse attackman's two-handed slash to the chest.
I mean, I guess that's fair, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's, you know, it hit him in the chest, didn't hit him in the throat or anything like that, and it kind of, you know, it looked pretty vicious, but I don't know. If you're wearing shoulder pads, I don't think it's even really going to hurt.
Well,
them.
No, I agree. I wasn't saying that particular example is something that should be a watershed moment for changing the tone of how MLL physical plays and checks and stuff are called. I'm just saying that was one example.
Sure. And that was the most visible example, obviously, because it resulted in a penalty for Mundorf. I don't know. I just think it needs to be more consistent, like establish a baseline. And I feel like this year it's gotten worse than it has in years past where the baseline was established early and this is called a slash and this isn't. And if you do this, you're going to get, you know, talked to. If you do this, you're going to get like a minute or maybe 2 minutes. I mean, college this year, I don't know about you, but I saw a ton of like 2 minute slash. And you're just like, is there a 2 minute slash? And I guess there is because referees had a lot more discretion in college this year. I'm not necessarily saying that should be applied in the MLL, but you know, and you should earn the slash, but know what a slash is. Like a slash is going at the guy's elbow when you're not even trying to get the ball. Like he's got the ball in a position where it's protected. You should wait to throw your check. You're never touching the stick. And you throw a massive two-hander, you know, right to the guy's elbow. That's a slash. Call it. That's all. I don't want to get too off on refs because I think everyone knows that I'm not the biggest fan of any ref ever. But it's
I've been thinking about taking up refereeing just to balance this out.
I mean, you can go ahead and do that. I'll never ref a game ever. It's awful. I've done it before. It's not fun. But it's also, you know, it's not the same headspace. You see the game a lot differently, and I think it kind of negatively impacts how you look at stuff, but that's just me. I'm sure, like, you know, Dixon has a different take on that, obviously, and I'm sure Quint probably does too, but it's just my personal thing with the game. Like,
looking for flaws is not the way that you want to go about looking at the game.
Well, I mean, obviously I do that too, but I'd rather watch it played than interrupt it, and I feel like refs interrupt a lot more than they should.
Okay. All right. Well, this is getting boring. So let's talk about the Outlaws' dominating performance. You wrote extensively about the Outlaws for InsideLacrosse.com this week. My first impression of this game ended up being the strongest impression that I took away from this game. Jeremy Sieverts, great game, MVP, not a huge surprise, not breaking any ground or ice or whatever by saying that. That being said, the ease it almost seemed like the ease with which he scored the first goal 43 seconds into the game in a very traditional right-handed alley dodge shot on the run, it was jaw-dropping. And it made me say, like, that's who their identity is. That's who they want to be. And they're doing it against the best, you know, one of their, whatever. At this point, basically just say a playoff team and a team that can win a championship. The litany of reasons that the Outlaws are good is long, and we don't need to go through it because, like I said, you just wrote about it. Fans can go there and read it. However, when you look at this game and the fact that they did fall behind, never really, like, you know, got out of reach, so to speak. It was never a significant advantage after Denver got their offense on track and started to chip away in the middle of the second quarter. What did that type of goal, do you come away with that with the same impression that I do in terms of, like, this is emblematic of why Denver's so good?
I don't think the game is emblematic of that, and maybe that goal isn't so much. I think his other, he had a couple other goals where he chained his dodges, you know, with the clear out, the other attackman, went behind the cage, the other one went through, the crease, and he went to work on, I don't remember his name. One of the Chesapeake short stick teammates. It wasn't Abbott. Burns. It was Burns. And he brought him to the left, rolled him again, rolled back to his, you know, his right hand and stung top corner from like 15. And it was like magical. Like that's the kind of goal you see. And you're just like, wow, that's pretty much unstoppable as a play goes, in lacrosse. And I think Denver makes, you know, 5 of those a game. And that's why they're good. This was probably the most contested, and, you know, part of the piece I did this week was look at how many times they've been down this season, in games and for how many minutes. And this is the game they've been down the longest. They were down about a total of like 37 minutes. I rounded up. So it's probably somewhere around like 36.5 or something like that, 36.30. But still, they were down and they came back in the fourth quarter, scored 4 straight goals and won. I mean, when they scored the fourth goal, you know, Snyder gets it from Kiminer, scores the fourth goal. You're pretty much going, well, you know, Chesapeake has time. They could do something. But really, you're like, probably not. Probably not. Because nothing Chesapeake was doing was really working after the first quarter. You know, Westervelt, natural hat trick, great goals, like really excellent goals, goals of all kinds. But they didn't really have – their big guns weren't really firing. You know, Powell wasn't really firing. Junior didn't really put up – I don't even think Junior had a point. He might have had an assist, but it just didn't look – yeah, he had one assist. It didn't look like they were going to win the game from that point, you know. Even though they had plenty of time to do so, you just kind of got the feeling like, you know, well, this is Denver. And, you know, the underrated part of Denver is their defense. And their defense is – spectacular and makes you do things that you don't want to do on offense. And that's one of the reasons they're great.
The Bayhawks won 12, I believe, of 30 faceoffs.
Yep.
We've been talking about it all year. There's a lingering threat. Made a relatively sizable difference down the stretch of last season and in the postseason.
Alex Smith.
What are your thoughts on number 11? And would he make the difference?
Would he? I don't know.
Would you bet on him to play well enough to the point where he does make the difference based on what he's done the last couple seasons?
In just championship weekend? I think he needs a tune-up first. I think you need to see if he can do it in a game. And this week or next week would be the time to do that, obviously. Because the Bayhawks are still not really juggling their lineup. I feel like they know who's going to be on the roster for championship weekend, but I think that is the question mark. And it's not like Rand has played bad at all. The whole, like, season-wide is like a just looking at his whole body of work. He has not played badly, but, you know, he doesn't have, like, the cachet that Alex Smith has, you know, coming in. And honestly, like, he has an intimidation factor, you know? Everyone's kind of, like, they're all trying to catch him cheating and, like, all the other face-off guys. I feel like there's kind of, like, a little jealousy in the face-off world with him and, like, how he, like, gained all his acclaim, and now he's like, oh, I'm just going to cameo and win championships. That's what I'm going to do.
Well, and it's not limited to his on-field persona. Like, also, he, you know, has established himself pretty well off the field too. And I do agree with that point that you just made.
Yeah, I think he could definitely make a difference. I mean, you saw Powell come in and make a difference, you know, last week. This week, you know, not so much, but he still got his shots off. He still looks good. Like, he didn't look bad this week. He just didn't – nothing dropped. I feel like, you know, Smith could definitely come in and do what he did last year, or he could come in and not do as well but still go, like, 50%, and you're kind of going, why don't you just play Adam Rand? Or he could just not come in. I don't think it's possible for him to come in and bomb. Is that, that's probably like the best endorsement I've given any player ever. Yeah, I don't think you can bomb. I think you can be average or good. Yeah. You know, like, I just feel like he's that guy. He has that talent level and he has that ability, just, you know, off the street, which is saying a lot, I think.
Well, moving on to the rest of the weekend, I feel like the three Saturday night games kind of need to be talked about in conjunction with one another because of their playoff implications. So I watched live Rochester beat New York 13-12. It was interesting to me because I felt, based on their first quarter lead, like Rochester was in command in a way that was more substantial than the score would have indicated throughout the rest of the game. Hamilton comes out and puts a hurt on Boston. Talked to a couple people this week. Nationals are saying that was the best game they've played all year. And then Charlotte beats Ohio 13-10. It basically puts Charlotte into the driver's seat as far as the fourth playoff spot is concerned. Boston, if they tie with Charlotte, will win the tiebreaker. So they essentially need to be saying to themselves that they need to win the next two games. Charlotte has a pretty hefty schedule with, I believe it's Hamilton this weekend and Chesapeake next weekend. The likelihood is that they won't win both of those games, but you can reasonably assume that they should be able to steal one and put them in a position where, you know, Boston needs to win two in order to tie, and Rochester is still alive as well. What do you take away from those, and how do you analyze the playoff picture for that fourth spot moving forward?
I think it's funny. I was on Twitter after all the games on Sunday, and our own Matt Kinnear is just like, wow, got every prediction wrong for this weekend. Doesn't feel good. You know, MLL is a crazy league. I think he probably expected, obviously, New York to play better and Ohio to play better. But, I mean, you know, Ohio is still Ohio. They can't score, man. Like, you can't – if you can't score, you can't win. Like, that sounds so base and so, like, lazy criticism. But, like, if you cannot score the ball – in a set offense and you rely on like one feeder or like one guy to make plays or Logan Schuss to like finish everything, you're not going to win. You know, someone needs to step up. Joe Cummings needs to step up. You know, Woodson needs to step up. All these guys that play offense need to step up. I thought the guy that played the best in that game, his first game back was Bice. I thought he played really well. Actually, I was shocked. You know, coming back from a broken foot in like week two, I think, and coming back and playing at a high level. I think that was really great to see. But, you know, Charlotte's got too much firepower. And the thing about Charlotte is like that game really should have been like 13-6. But, you know, Ohio, you know, this is the thing Charlotte does. They take the foot off the pedal. You know, I just don't get it. Like you watch them slow. They have like a slow down offense they run when they're up. And it's like that's not what you need to be doing. You need to be attacking constantly. You need to be getting shots on the net. You know, good quality shots. Don't rush yourself, but get shots on the net. Go to the cage. And sometimes they don't do that. And I feel like they let teams back into games. You know, the Charlotte I want to see is the Charlotte that was there in the second quarter that dropped 8 goals on Ohio's face. Like that's the Charlotte you want to see playing the whole game. But you know, they take their time and they try to grind out wins, and that's not who they are. You know, that's not who your team is. You're not a grinding team. Sorry. Like, I don't feel like that's an insult, but you are not a grinding team. You're not Chesapeake. You know, you don't have the grind gear.
They're explosive.
You yeah. Your scorers score in bunches. You know, they don't score consistently throughout the game. They score in bunches, and they have so many weapons to shoot and get into good positions and dodge and create their own shots that you don't need to rely on one person, you know? And once a team sees that you're trying to do that, they're going to go after that guy and they can shut him down. You know, everyone on Charlotte can be shut down. And that's something that I think, you know, you can't shut all of them down and they need to distribute the ball better. But sometimes guys, like, especially the rookies, are a little shy with the ball and won't go to Cage in that slowdown set they run. And, I think that's really going to cost them if, especially in these next two games, you know, against Hamilton and Chesapeake. I think the Hamilton Charlotte game is the biggest game of the weekend coming up.
And then just real quick, it seems to me like Rochester, only saw him a couple times early in the season, but over the last several weeks has turned into very much a John Rannigan, Dave Lawson driven, kind of offense. What are your thoughts on how that's played out for them?
Well, Rochester forced the ball a lot for the first half of the season to the crease. And, you know, it's not a horrible plan when you have the Lavelle brothers and, you know, you had Millen in there for a little bit, forcing the crease, McIntosh, forcing the crease isn't the worst thing, but teams figured that out pretty quick. And, you know, I don't think teams have figured out how to stop Lawson and Rannigan when they're on the same line. I just don't think that's happened. And, you know, eventually a team is going to pull both those guys and leave an attackman with a shorty. And I don't know if they have the dodging attackman to take advantage of that. You know, is Steve Boyle going to take advantage of that? I don't know. I think it's just a matter of trying to figure out, you know, the best way to stop the two rookies, because the two rookies are just playing out of their heads. You know, if they don't have those two guys, I feel like they're not even close to as good as they are. And, you know, the kind of gradual, if not grind, you know, just sudden, even, I don't even think it's gradual anymore, the sudden lack of impact that Ned Crotty has had in these last couple of games is kind of shocking. And I think teams are going to leave him, and I think he still has the potential to drop a 5-point game, but he just has not played like himself this whole year. So Rochester, still dangerous, still in the hunt, still hungry for wins. Definitely showed against New York, but they're going to have to put up or shut up in the next 2 weeks. And I don't know if they have it in them. I don't know if they can do 3 weeks in a row of a great performance. I just don't know if they can do it.
Well, you mentioned that Matt Kinnear incorrectly picked the all, you know, the whatever, whether it be games or who was going to make the playoffs and playoff scenarios, et cetera, heading into last weekend. We don't have a guest, so in the place of that, my thought is, why don't we, you and I do a Mike and the Mad Dog style, game by game, who's going to win, and then I'll take it down, and when we're done with it, we'll come up with final records, we'll come up with playoff seeding, we'll come up with who makes the playoffs. You up for it?
Wow, yeah. Do I have to do the voice? Because I can't do the voice.
No, because I can't do the voice either.
All right, cool.
All right, well, first up, Ohio heads to Boston tomorrow afternoon. Harvard Stadium, Cans, two home games left this year. Who do you pick?
I got to go with Boston. Back against the wall, you know, Rabel playing with – that's the other thing that came out on the conference call is Rabel has a sports hernia just like Mundorf does. It's painful. It sucks. You definitely feel slower, but, you know, you can definitely play through it. I think Boston has too many weapons for Ohio to deal with defensively. I think it would take not a miracle for Ohio to win, but I think Ohio needs to play better than they've played all year to win the game. Are the chances of that high? I don't think so. Is it possible? Yes. But also Boston has to play poorly or play like they did in the first half of the season to lose that game. I feel like definitely Boston has the edge there.
Memorial Stadium, 7 p.m. Saturday night. The Charlotte Hounds host the Hamilton Nationals. Who do you got?
First time these teams played, went to overtime. You know, Delente, who is no longer with the Nationals, wins the draw, brings it down, scores right away. Fallon had his best game of the year that day. Struggled last week. I think, you know, I think Charlotte with the home advantage – you know, if they go up, I'll say this. If Charlotte goes up, I feel like they can win as long as they keep attacking. But if Hamilton fixes their transition defense, which was a huge problem last week against Boston, even though they won, if Hamilton does that, I feel like it could be ugly. But I also think Charlotte understands and has the more pressure than Hamilton does. Hamilton has the playoff spot already. So they might, you know, I don't think they're tinkering with the roster, but I think they'll move a couple guys in and out.
They're definitely tinkering with their roster.
Yeah, but not in the way that it's going to change everything they do. You know, I feel like they're still going to play the same way. You know, sometimes when Chesapeake tinkers, they move guys to midfield and they move guys around at the attack position. But, you know, Hamilton has, you know, maybe Jameson doesn't play. You know, so what? They have like 8 attackmen. Like, just plug a guy in. I think they have a lot of guys that maybe are trying to make that roster for championship weekend that could make a difference. You know, and I think it's Chesapeake's game to lose. But I also think Charlotte understands how much the game means and could really...
Hamilton's game to lose. But either way, you're waffling. Make a pick.
Same. Hamilton.
Rochester Rattlers head to Navy Marine Corps Stadium. Concurrent with that game in Charlotte, the Chesapeake Bayhawks host the Rats. Very similar dynamic in terms of one team already being into the postseason and one team fighting for a spot. Who you got?
I feel like... as well as Chesapeake played last week against Denver and only lost by 2, they're still struggling a little bit. Kip Turner didn't have a great game. You know, John Gallagher can win you a game, but I think Chesapeake solves the rookie mystery of Rannigan and Lawson, and Chesapeake wins.
And then the last game of the weekend, the New York Lizards host the Denver Outlaws, 5 p.m. on Sunday, Schuert Stadium. Wow. This is pretty interesting. 3 of the teams are ending the season on 2-game homestands. It's pretty wild. Anyway, who do you got? Denver Lizards.
Ugh. I mean, everyone's saying trap game, trap game, trap game. I don't see it. I think it's a blow up. I think New York's not even going to play half their good players or their marquee guys. You know, you haven't seen Matthews for a couple weeks. Gibson's hurt. I don't know. I think they're kind of a mess on offense. I don't think they have a chance. Midfield's been awful. So I think Denver's going to roll them by like 8.
Okay. So remember when I said that I was going to take down who you picked?
Yep.
Boston, Hamilton. I totally blanked on who your third pick was between Rochester, Chesapeake. Okay. Boston, Hamilton, Chesapeake, Denver. All right. So let's project ahead to next week, August 10th. It's kind of like a Premier League style. Everybody's playing at the same time pretty much. Saturday, 7 p.m., with the exception of Hamilton. Also, whatever. First up, Rochester, Boston, Harvard Stadium again. Who you got?
Both these teams could be done by then. But I think Boston with the home advantage, unless Rochester wins that game, I think Boston takes it just on sheer talent alone. And Rochester's probably just kind of ready to get it over with if they lost last week, which is the prediction that I made against Chesapeake, the game this coming weekend. I think Boston takes it, especially, you know, the last 2 games Boston have in the homestand.
Charlotte, Chesapeake?
I think Chesapeake experiments a lot and gives Charlotte a little bit of hope there. But I think Charlotte takes that last one from Chesapeake. Give Chesapeake a little smack in the mouth for the playoffs.
Going for an undefeated regular season and potentially a preview for a team that they would plan to see in the championship game 2 weeks later, Denver Outlaws head to Hamilton to take on the Nationals. Who you got?
Well, as you know, I'm a New England Patriots fan, and the prevailing thought when they had that undefeated regular season, went to the Super Bowl and lost to the Giants on a play that I still weep softly about when I go to sleep. Everyone thinks that Denver needs to lose to win. They need to lose one. They need to know what it tastes like. I don't think so. I don't think they need that. I think this is a potential championship game matchup on championship weekend. And I think Denver pulls out all the stops, even though I think they probably rest Kelly. Robarge plays a little bit. Robarge-Poppleton, not the worst matchup ever for Denver. Poppleton has not been that strong on draws this season, winning less than 50%. Now, I think Denver takes it. I think it's real close. I think Hamilton definitely gives them their best contest of the game. Denver only wins by 1, but Denver wins.
Okay, that'll be exciting. And then setting up the irrelevant game of the weekend, the toilet bowl, if you will, yes, for the ignominious honor of being the last the lowest ranked team in the weekly MLL Inside Lacrosse Power Rankings. The Ohio Machine head to New York Shewhart Stadium to take on the New York Lizards. By the way, we've been doing this for a while now. We're talking about the end of the season. Are you impressed with my ability to call the Lizards not the Long Island Lizards?
It's been good. It's taken some adjustment on all of our sides. I think all media's still popped a little Long Island in there every once in a while. If you watch, I think they did it on Inside the MLL last week too. They popped a little Long Island on there, but, you know, it's good. It's definitely been an adjustment, but, they haven't really given us a reason to care too much. So I think this game ends in a tie. No, I think Ohio takes it and, you know, takes the last one from the Lizards, just rips their heart out. You know, I think Ohio gets that win to kind of set them up for next year. They still have the first pick if they, even if they win. But I think that they leave it all on the field. They pour all the chips in the middle and, New York tries to win it with two pair and gets smoked.
All right. So do you know already what the outcome of your predictions is?
I can guess. I think that I have Boston in that last spot, right?
You do.
Yeah. So it's, what is it? Denver, Hamilton, Chesapeake, Boston?
That's right.
So we got Denver, Boston, Chesapeake, Hamilton. Wow. That's going to be fun. That's a fun lineup.
I would think so, yeah. PPL Park can look forward to that.
Yeah. I think, you know, this is purely kind of selfish because I had two of the covers this summer and the two teams featured on the cover, Bayhawks, Outlaws. I think they both win. I think they play each other in the championship game. And not to jinx it, but I really think, you know, Denver, as long as everyone's healthy, let me throw that caveat in there, as long as someone doesn't break their ankle in practice again, I think Denver's going to take it all, and you know the curse will be lifted, and then there will be a new curse on whoever the new curse is going to be on. Boston's won, Denver will have won, Chesapeake will have won. I think the new curse is what? New York?
Charlotte Hounds, we're looking at you. The Lizards have won.
Yeah, but not for a while, right?
That doesn't mean they're cursed.
I guess
your use of the term curse is far too liberal.
Hey. Too soon. That's not true. We got rid of it in 2004. I'm still sensitive. I think Denver takes it, man. I don't want to jinx them. I like the Denver organization. They're very, good with media, which is not what I can say with some of these other organizations. I think Denver takes it and, you know, the perfect season happens. And I think that's one of the best stories that can come out of this season. And definitely be the best way to end the season as well.
There it is. Well, Kyle Devin, on that note, we're going to end this podcast. Let people out of here early.
Yeah, what's up? Positivity for the win.
All right, go enjoy yourselves this weekend. Take in the MLL action.
Yep. See you guys. Inside the Cross Podcast.